Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Manic Candace podcast. This is your girl Candace, back at it again with a brand new episode of the podcast. And today, this morning, this evening, this afternoon, this good night, we're going to discuss something very serious, and it's a big elephant in the country, big elephant in the room, and it's prison. I've never been to prison. I never been in trouble to the point where I was facing prison, but I had a loved one who went to prison. And for those of you who don't know the difference between jail and prison, one of them is that prison is guaranteed a year or more. I have a degree in criminal justice. I'm not here to break down the statistics about prison, how many people in the United States or around the world are incarcerated. I just want to share with you what a family goes through, what I went through with my loved one. And I have a unique experience, I feel like, because not only do I have a loved one who went to prison, their sister was my mother, who was a federal officer. Retired now. She was a federal officer for 28 years. 29 years. One of them. Doesn't matter. But before we get into that, I just want to catch up and say, hey, I know it's been about 3 weeks and I will try not to be so late on episodes. But truth is, you guys, I'm like feeling like I'm kind of running out of things to talk about because I'm not someone who makes episodes based on, well, not all the time. I'm not someone who makes episodes based on celebrity news or the latest headlines. I mean, if I get to that point, God, I hope I don't. Like, it's gonna get boring. Like, I have a favorite YouTube podcaster named Tim Dillon, and he was like hilarious in his beginning years, and I still watch him from 10 years ago versus I still watch him now, but like versus 10 years ago. So I don't want to get to a point where I'm covering headlines and celebrity news, and that's it. Speaking of celebrity news, Diddy's trial is in like 4 weeks, 3 weeks. It's going to be the trial of the decade. I'm not sure about the trial of the century because I think Casey Anthony and Jodi Arias take that cake. But I'm shocked. Like, a new lawsuit came out yesterday. It's April 2nd, 2025. Yesterday was April 1st. Happy April Fools. Happy New Year to those of us who celebrate New Year in April. But yeah. Diddy. Yeah. But that new lawsuit was naming Beyonce, Jay-Z, and LeBron James, and a couple other names that I can't remember, as witnesses to his assault. So who fucking knows? This is the second lawsuit that Jay-Z has been linked to. The first one was dropped, I think, because he intimidated the witness, but whatever. I am going to continue the podcast without music. These are some updates. Please visit my website in the description, mdmaq.com. I don't have an email at this time, but I will be opening an email soon enough. I have to change so many things in the descriptions on YouTube, in the descriptions on every podcast episode that I've done. It's just going to be time consuming. I don't have an assistant. I don't have anybody. It's just me doing this thing. So, yeah, the reason why I'm not making music anymore or bringing music in the podcast anymore is because I have not been asked to do ads. I have not been asked to do sponsorships. I have not been asked for, I mean, I have my content on YouTube hasn't been pushed. It can't be featured in like TikToks because I get in trouble because I have a song in the background. And it's like common sense, right? But to be honest, you guys, I was just afraid of like my own voice. I know that sounds stupid because I have a podcast, but I was afraid of it. I was like, I can't stand alone. I feel like I'm boring. And that's completely farther from the truth. Completely farther. It's the farthest from the truth. Today was a good day. I'm in between jobs right now. And it's kind of a... It's giving me a lot of anxiety, not gonna lie. So I'm trying to relax. And part of me relaxing is getting things off my chest. And I was thinking, what am I going to talk about on the podcast in my next episode? I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. Because I try to make these episodes, like with my last episode, How to Survive Sexual Assault, I try to make them as helpful as possible. I try to make people feel like they're not alone. I try to share my struggles if I've overcome them or when I overcome them, because I feel like it could help people. People listen to me around the world. I mean, around the world. It's a blessing. Thank you so much. Please drop your country in the comments. Please. If you're on YouTube, if you're on Spotify, I want to know where you're listening from. Please let me know. And why do you like listening to my American ass? I want to know. This girl from Canada told me that she likes hearing an American's perspective of when, like, real life politics go down, and, like, she watches our politics like it's a soap opera. And I'm just like, fuck. Anyways, was there anything else that I wanted to talk about before we get right into the nitty gritty? Oh, it's 3:46 a.m. And like I said, I was thinking in bed, like, what am I going to talk about? And I try to make things meaningful. And one thing that I've overcome, not alone, but with my family, collectively, we went through this together. I have a very tight family. And I'm blessed. I love my family and I wouldn't trade it for anything else. But there was a Roman Empire happening in our family, and that's when one of our loved ones was arrested. And let me just talk about the arrest really quick. They were arrested by the FBI and specifically SWAT. And when you're like, you've like it was for murder. And I don't want to cry in this episode, but a part of me never accepted that. Even though they are convicted, I just never accepted it. I have the utmost respect for the families of the victims, but a part of me just doesn't accept it. And I can't really explain why. It's because I love them so much. And when you are when you're a family member of a defendant, of someone who's accused and someone who ends up being guilty, like, you, it's almost like they die and you are just mourning, especially with something like that. It was very hard to reconcile someone I knew, someone I trusted, someone I loved, someone I looked up to was capable of something like that. And the circumstances around it were, there was drugs involved. It was a drug deal gone bad. That's what they called it. That's what I remember hearing when I was little. I was 8. When my mom came in my room and she sat me down on the bed. I was holding I can't remember if it was a Diet Coke or a Dr. Pepper in a Fat Tuesday cup. I will never forget this moment. She told me so-and-so has been arrested and they're going to jail, and they're going to jail for a long time. And it's pretty serious. And, like, I remember just my mom crying and her being on the phone. She was on the phone for hours, all night, days. My family is predominantly in another state. So we live a state over. And so I will never forget that moment because I knew I would not that I would never see them. See what? Yeah, I thought I would never see them again. Thought I would never see them again. Because of the charges. Once I found, I mean, I didn't know it was murder at that moment, but I just felt like I would just never see them again. And it, no one talks about prison on the side of the family, the side of the people who love you, who the people who go to prison. No one talks about the people who love them and how hard it is for them. It's hard for, if you are someone that has been to prison, just know that you weren't alone being alone. You weren't alone in, I don't know, suffering, feeling like you were forgotten. I can only imagine what she felt. Because we didn't, we were so mad. We were so mad. Some of us didn't visit. Some of us don't talk to them again, like till this day. And as I got older, like my feelings changed. When I got older, I began to become angry at them. Not for what they did, but for the effect it had on the family, and it was their fault. My family, in my eyes, split apart when they went to prison, when they were arrested. That's just my point of view. But it was never the same, ever. No Christmas was the same. Because they were gone. And it was like my grandmother became depressed. And that was the first time I saw what depression was really like. I mean, a lot of us think we know what being depressed is. But when you have your child in prison for murder, like, how do you reconcile that in your day to day? And if the whole time, I mean, the trial didn't happen for at least a year. There were other people involved that were on the run, and it was scary when they were on the run. Because our family received threats. Because my loved one was, I think they were cooperating. I think that's my assumption based on the outcome for murder. The drug that was involved in this was meth. And that's why I really hate meth. I really hate, not meth users, but just meth. I hate how addictive it is. I hate how back in the, I don't see it these days just because I'm not in the mix that much. But people used to kill each other over this shit. I mean, they still do over like who's selling it or whatever. but I have a special hatred towards meth because of what it did. The common denominator in this trial and this murder and why it happened was because of meth. And I hate it. I just hate it. Every time I hear that word, I think about what it did to my family. And I'm sick. And I hate it because it took them away from us. You know, and if you ever want to trigger me, just say meth. If you ever want to piss me off, say meth. Say it. Like, I hate it. So they were on the run. They get arrested, the other perpetrators, and then the trial happens. And it's, I don't attend anything. I don't think anyone in my family attended anything during her trial, and I was a kid, okay? I was not in the same state that the trial was happening. I wasn't like my mom was gonna pick up her job or drop her job at the federal court and attend to their sibling who is on trial for felony murder. Like, my mom is so strong. Like, I don't know how she handled that paradox of going to federal court every day and working with defendants all day, working with federal judges all day. My mom was a pretrial officer, and part of her job was assessing and writing reports about the defendant's behavior while they were on her supervision to recommend sentencing. Whether they should go to rehab, whether they should go to a halfway house, whether they should be released on ankle monitoring, whether they should go back to prison, like different things. And having to come home and that being your reality, not because she was a felon, but because her sibling was going through trial for felony murder. Like, it just, I don't know how you handle that type of duality. And for a second, I thought that my family was a joke, because I'm just like, how? How? How does this happen? And I thought of my grandma's point of view. I'm like, how do you have one child that's a federal officer and another child that is a convicted murderer? Like, how does that happen? And it's almost like, now that I'm older, in my point of view, from what I've seen, like, I feel like, I can look back and I can really see how angry their siblings, because my grandma has 6 kids. So I, like, 5 of them, I could see how angry they were at that one. So they're in prison, right? They're in prison. And what no one talks about is how stuck in time they are. And it's because they're in prison. If you have a loved one in prison, your mom, dad, your aunt, your uncle, your brother, your sister, your grandpa, your grandpa, your uncle, your aunt, whatever. If you have someone in prison that you love, write them. No matter what they did, write them. Write them that you're pissed off at them. Write them that you forgive them. Write them that you love them. Write them that you miss them. With how many people that have been to prison in the U.S. and that are in prison in the U.S., I'm talking to somebody. Like, I am talking to somebody. One of my regrets in life was not writing them in prison. I feel so bad
they missed me growing up. And at one point in their lives, I was their favorite. I'm the first grandchild, so we were very, very close. I remember them playing with my hair all the time, taking pictures of me all the time, taking me to eat fast food because I was a fat ass. Like, I will never get that back. I hope, man, they're still alive to this day, but like, I just pray they can get it together. They can forget the shame. Because I feel like they feel a lot of shame. And that they can barely show their face around us. I hate drugs. I know I have a history of drugs, but like my own self. But I hate them. I hate it. I hate addiction. When you're addicted, you do a lot of stupid things, including murder. You do a lot of stupid things. I remember the day they sentenced them, the courts, the federal courts, the judge. I remember driving to that state, and I remember having to dress nice because it was court. And I just remember the word sentencing. We're going to a sentencing. Now that I'm older and I have a criminology degree, it's everything just makes sense. What I went through. And I think me studying criminology was me trying to reconcile my life. Because this affected my life. Them going to prison, my family breaking up, it not being the same. Like, it just... They were sentenced. They were facing 3 counts of murder in the first degree, and they were sentenced to I believe 10 years. Yes, it was 10 years. They were sentenced to 10 years prison, 5 years probation. And I remember them turning around, looked at my grandma, and screamed, less than a year, mommy, less than a year. Because they got time served from the judge. And the trial didn't take 10 years. It just took 10 years because... There were other people that were involved, were on the run, and it took a long, they call it at large. They were at large for years, and they were caught and prosecuted to the fullest extent, and they were sentenced to life, and I think one got the death penalty, but my loved one got 10 years time served, less than a year. And like, when your loved one is the one on the stand, all this street shit, all this snitch shit, all this stupid shit goes out the fucking window. Do you hear me? All this loyalty, gang, blah, blah, blah. When it's you on the motherfucking stand and you're facing life and you're facing death, and your family's in there crying, and you haven't seen your family in 10 years, like, what would you do? It really grinds my fucking teeth when people talk about, don't snitch, don't be a snitch. Like, it really pisses me off. Because as a family member, I want nothing but my loved one back. I want nothing But for this to not be true and for things to go back to normal, I want nothing but that. So if they have to confess to come back to their loved ones as soon as they can, that's what they're going to do. That's what I hope they're going to do. So that's what I hope they do in another situation. Like, I hate the concept of snitch. I hate that word too. So, okay. So they got out of prison. Getting out of prison when you've been in prison that long, 5, 7 years, 10 years, you become institutionalized. And you can't integrate back into society. It's still difficult for them to integrate into society. They had 10 years to catch up in pop culture, in the way the country is ran, in the way we get jobs, technology, everything. Think about 10 years. How much changed in 10 years? They were arrested when I was 8. They got out on my 18th birthday. And that was one of the best gifts that I've ever received, was them getting out. We ate at this restaurant. No, we took them to McDonald's. And they threw up because they weren't eating fast food in prison. So they threw up everywhere. And I was like, wow, that is crazy. And it got me thinking, I'm like, what are we eating at McDonald's? So, because they loved McDonald's before they went to prison. So, yeah. And then we went to another restaurant for my birthday. And then it was just, it was almost like they never left. They were their same goofy self. Same everything. But I think the difficulty of life in general, how hard it is to be independent, especially if when you get out of prison, I think that we set people up for failure when they get out of prison. I'm saying this as a witness to it, and I'm saying this as someone who studied it. We fail these people, and that's why recidivism, in my opinion, is so fucking high. Recidivism is the rate of when someone who's been to prison goes back to prison. I believe it's like 80-something percent. 85. So nowadays, I truly believe spiritually they are suffering from what they've done, what they were involved in years ago. Because there are people who are no longer on this earth because of them. And, you know, what kind of reckoning is there when you take a life? I don't know. And I'm not going to find out. But jeez. I love them so much. I miss them every day. And I wish things didn't have to play out like this. Really wish it didn't. But they're out, and they've stayed out of prison. And you know, they brought the family a gift. And that's their child. That's my brother. I call him my brother. He has shown me that life is worth it. If you have a loved one in prison, you know my heart is with you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I know it's a long time. And for some people, they're not getting out. And I'm sorry.
This has been Candace with the Manic Candace Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please share this episode with your friends, family, and your followers. And I bid you adieu, my friends. Bye-bye.